The provisional agenda for this meeting is the situation in Somalia. The agenda is adopted. In accordance with Rule 37 of the Council's Provisional Rules of Procedure, I invite the representatives of Eritrea and Somalia to participate in this meeting. It is so decided. The Security Council will now begin its consideration of Item 2 of the agenda. Members of the Council have before them document S/2015/810, the text of a draft resolution submitted by Lithuania, the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, and the United States of America. I wish to draw the attention of Council members to documents S/2015/801 and S/2015/802, letters dated 9th of October 2015 from the Chair of the Security Council Committee pursuant to Resolutions 751 and 1907 concerning Somalia and Eritrea addressed to the President of the Security Council. The Council is ready to proceed to the vote on the draft resolution before it. I shall now put the draft resolution to the vote. Will those in favour of the draft resolution contained in document S/2015/810 please raise their hand? Those against? Abstentions? The result of the voting is as follows. 14 votes in favour. No votes against, one abstention. The draft resolution has been adopted as Resolution 2244. I now give the floor to those members of the Council who wish to make a statement after the vote. I first of all give the floor to the Ambassador of the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela. Thank you, President. Venezuela abstained in this vote on the resolution because we feel that the negotiating process that led to this resolution was not broad enough to take into account the various points of view of delegations. Therefore, our request to extend consultations to produce the consensus text was not regarded. The silence procedure did not take into account our reservations. Venezuela tried to bring about understanding so that the various points of view could be reflected in a balanced text that would be politically dynamic and help the situation in the Horn of Africa. After silence was broken on the draft resolution to continue dialogue and achieve a common text, we were surprised when negotiations opened again between a small group of countries without the participation of Venezuela and the majority of the non-permanent members of the Security Council. This recurring practice affects the working methods of this organ, in particular its transparency and inclusiveness that should prevail at all stages of negotiations to guarantee the participation of all of its members and, at the end of the day, the unity of the Security Council. President, my country demands respect in this Security Council, respect from the pen holders for the points of view of all countries, be they permanent or elected members to this Security Council. Also, as chairs of these committees, we have reasonable doubts as to whether there is a wrong interpretation and wrong attributes being made by the committee with regard to what is stated in the resolutions that created the Somalia-Eritrea Sanctions Committee. Venezuela assumed the chair of the committee, created on pursuant to Resolution 751 because we were convinced that we needed to progress with all member states towards improving relations between the committee and the affected countries in order to achieve the major goal of a political solution to the conflict. This should be the aim and instrument of sanctions. They cannot be used for hidden purposes to punish countries and to hurt their peoples. The sanctions committees are only meaningful if they help to bring about a political solution to conflicts. They shouldn't be to fan the flames of conflict or prolong it if it cannot put an end to it. And finally, as this resolution states in preamble paragraph 14 and OP 27, amongst others, that some permanent members feel that the sanctions regime is an end in itself. And under that premise, they are attempting to extend the mandate and the scope of the resolution to new areas indefinitely. And this is not in line with any political objective that the sanctions may have had when they were initially designed. We are committed to the peaceful settlement of disputes in any part of the world, pursuant to Article 2 of the Charter of the United Nations. Our position is based on the importance of respecting the sovereignty and independence of states, their governments, and their peoples, and that we should trust in their capacity to solve their problems without interference or guardianships. This is the way we can peacefully solve conflicts. And in conclusion, I would like to call upon all members of this council. We've been working under your presidency to revise our working methods, and I think that the way in which the sanctions committees work is something that really does need to be thoroughly revised and rethought by this council. Thank you, Mr. President. I thank you for your statement, and I now give the floor to the Deputy Permanent Representative of the Russian Federation.
President, the Russian Federation voted for the UK delegation draft resolution, the comprehensive resolution on Somalia and Eritrea. Since for us and for other council members, the imperative is a swiftly achieving peace and stability in the countries of the African Horn. However, we still have concerns as to the intrusive nature of a number of provisions of the resolution, effectively undermining the principles of state sovereignty. We should also point out that, as in like with last year, certain provisions of the draft are based on facts that haven't been confirmed of the outcome report of the Security Council Monitoring Group 751/1907. Let me reiterate that during preparation of its documents, experts shouldn't transcend the purview of their mandate. They need to be guided by only verified facts and not build their conclusions on the basis of conjecture and barefaced accusations. We're forced to reiterate that sanctions methods of use of sanctions is rarely an effective measure. Settling conflicts needs to take place exclusively through political diplomatic means on the basis of mutually respecting multifaceted dialogue between all the states in the region. I thank you.
I thank you for your statement. I now give the floor to the Ambassador of New Zealand.
Thank you, Mr. President. We welcome the adoption of this resolution. We particularly welcome that the resolution makes specific provision to reinforce Somalia's ability to exercise sovereignty over its natural resources. Disputes between illegal fishing vessels, local fishermen and armed groups concerning the illegal exploitation of Somalia's natural resources risk becoming a driver of conflict. Somalia's concerns over its ability to control access to its resources is not unique. The governance and exploitation of natural resources and the challenge of illegal, unreported and unregulated fishing was also identified by many member states during the open debate held in July on peace and security issues facing small island developing states. On Eritrea, New Zealand recognises that there are important issues to address regarding the scope and focus of the sanctions regime in the light of the last two reports of the monitoring team. We hope that an improved relationship, including on access between the government of Eritrea and the monitoring group, may enable the Council to take clear decisions in the future about whether the original purpose for which the sanctions were imposed continues to apply. Thank you.
Agradezco su intervención y a continuación daré la palabra.
Thank you very much. I now give the floor to representative of China.
Mr. President, China voted in favor of Resolution 2244 adopted by the Council just now. Since the beginning of this year, the federal government of Somalia, with the vigorous support of the international community, has been dedicated to the implementation of Vision 2016, actively safeguarded state security, promoted economic development, and improved the people's living standard, which China highly appreciates. We hope Resolution 2244 can be fully and accurately implemented and that it will play a genuinely constructive role in promoting Somalia's peaceful reconstruction and safeguarding regional peace and stability. Mr. President, the final report of the monitoring group of the Somalia and Eritrea Sanctions Committee indicated no evidence showing Eritrean government support for al-Shabaab had been found. The Council should, in view of changes in situation, make corresponding adjustments to relevant sanctions measures to create conditions for the eventual lifting of sanctions. China has always supported Africa in resolving African issues in an African way and encouraged relevant countries in the region to appropriately resolve their differences through dialogue and consultation and to jointly work for regional peace, stability and development. I thank you.
Le agradezco.
I thank you for your statement and I now give the floor to the Ambassador of the United Kingdom.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. The United Kingdom welcomes the adoption today of Resolution 2244 and the 14 positive votes which it received. The monitoring group has a key role to play in keeping this Council informed on sanctions issues in a region which is so important to our collective work. At the heart of the group's ability to do its work is the willingness of governments to cooperate. And unfortunately, today's resolution reflects two very different approaches to this cooperation. On the one hand, cooperation between the monitoring group and the government of Eritrea is on the wrong trajectory. The group has not been able to visit Eritrea since February 2011, despite successive Security Council resolutions which make clear the importance of the group being able to discharge its mandate fully by visiting Eritrea. Now, today's Security Council resolution couldn't be clearer on what Eritrea needs to do, deepening engagement with the group and facilitating the group's regular entry into Eritrea. Eritrea is the master of its own destiny and is at a crossroads. Either admit the group to Eritrea, show the Council that they have nothing to hide, and then engage in a serious discussion on the appropriateness of sanctions, or choose continued isolation. The United Kingdom very much hopes that they choose the first course of action. On the other hand, in Somalia, the monitoring group has built a strong relationship with the government. We applaud the group and the government for their constructive engagement throughout the course of the group's mandate. We're pleased to see the group spending more time in Somalia. The United Kingdom commends the progress that the government of Somalia has made in managing its weapons. There are still some worrying reports of weapons being diverted for government stocks, but the trajectory is the right one. On public financial management, again, there is progress, but much more needs to be done. Proper management of public finances in the run-up to next year's elections is key to ensuring trust between the government and its people. And the United Kingdom will continue to be at the forefront of efforts to support the Somali government to strengthen its management of public resources. Mr. President, the United Kingdom is a strong supporter of the monitoring group. We look forward to their reporting over the coming year, and we hope that the government of Eritrea chooses cooperation over isolation. Thank you.
Le agradezco su intervención y a continuación.
Thank you for your statement, and I now give the floor to the Deputy Permanent Representative of the United States.
President, the United States strongly supports this resolution, which targets many of the most serious causes of instability and insecurity in Somalia, and mandates the United Nations Somalia and Eritrea Monitoring Group to continue its important work. This resolution reflects the Security Council's understanding that the international response to the situation in the Horn of Africa must be comprehensive in order to be effective. As highlighted during the Secretary General's high-level meeting on Somalia during the 70th session of the General Assembly, Somalia's trajectory has turned from state failure towards state building, and this is why the United States strongly supported language in this resolution that underscores the importance of stronger and more transparent legal frameworks and ensuring the participation of regional administrations as Somalia continues to make strides with its state building process this year. The United States continues to support the Security Council's commitment to eliminate all sources of funding for al-Shabaab, including by reauthorizing the maritime interdiction of Somali charcoal exports in order to enforce the Security Council's ban on its export. Somalia is clearly a country blessed with rich natural resources, but without stronger legal frameworks and resource-sharing agreements, these potential sources of wealth for all Somalis risk become drivers of conflict. We therefore welcome this resolution's attention to these ongoing governance challenges and the importance of the federal government of Somalia has placed on addressing such issues expeditiously. The federal government of Somalia has sought greater international recognition and support for Somalia's challenges related to the extensive illegal fishing that is occurring in waters where it has jurisdiction. In recognition of this, today the Security Council acknowledges its concern over this matter and encourages the federal government of Somalia, with the support of the international community, to undertake efforts to better address this practice. By supporting the full implementation of the measures reflected in today's resolution, member states will help to promote the long-term peace and stability of the wider region. Additionally, and importantly, we call on all countries to cooperate with the Somalia and Eritrea Monitoring Group so that this vital body can carry out its mandate effectively. We also call upon Eritrea to respond to the Monitoring Group's request for information and permit the group to travel to Eritrea. Eritrea's refusal to engage constructively with the Monitoring Group must change before we can take seriously Eritrean calls for these sanctions to be lifted. Somalis are laying the foundation for a more stable, representative, and inclusive government. The international community and this council must remain engaged to ensure Somalia and the region realize a more peaceful future, and we thank council members for joining with us in sending that strong message today. Thank you, Mr. President.
I thank you for your statement, and I now give the floor to the Ambassador of Somalia.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, congratulations on assuming the presidency of the month of October of the Security Council. I am very grateful, Mr. President, for this opportunity to brief the esteemed Council. I would like to address a few key points briefly. One, the federal government of Somalia has worked tirelessly in the last year to reduce key threats to peace, security, and stability to Somalia. The government has also demonstrated its commitment to complying with the relevant Security Council resolutions, as also mentioned by a number of members of the Security Council. Mr. President, I would like to draw your attention to the stark differences between the Somalia of the past, that is of 1992, when the Security Council Committee was established, and Somalia of 2015. Indeed, the committee and its member and its mandate were established when Somalia was in the middle of civil unrest, or in the case of expanding its mandate in 2009 during the administration of the nascent transitional government. Mr. President, this was a period when the country lacked federal and regional institutions and financial oversight mechanisms. In contrast, today Somalia has functioning institutions, including the Board of Directors of the Central Bank of Somalia, parliamentary oversight committees of the Somali Parliament, the offices of the Accountant General, and an independent office of the Auditor General. as well as capacity support of the Financial Governance Committee, whose members are comprised of international financial institutions, including the World Bank, IMF, and the African Development Bank. The Financial Governance Committee, the FGC's role is to assist the federal government in enhancing its capacities in the public finance management and to support the Central Bank of Somalia in its efforts to recover and manage assets, conduct procurement activities, assist with the review of potential contracts and concessions, establish federal revenue and budget procedures, as well as enhancing the effectiveness of governance of the Central Bank of Somalia. Furthermore, progress has been achieved along the legislative side today. There are four legislative instruments pending before the Somali Parliament of particular relevance to the public finance management reform, and they are the Audit Bill, the Public Finance Management Bill, the Public Procurement, Concession and Disposal Bill, and Anti-Money Laundering Bill, and Counter-Terrorist Financing Bill. The above-mentioned institutional and legislative actions demonstrate that the government of Somalia is rapidly enhancing its capacities and now has in place proper oversight mechanism to oversee its financial governance. Mr. President, the federal government also made tremendous progress in establishing the framework for the implementation of the state building within Somalia. Towards this end, the Somali government established new interim regional administrations and National Independent Electoral Commission and the National Consultative Forum, and indeed began an extensive constitutional review process. 3 years ago, when the government was appointed, it created a vision for 2016. The vision identified three fundamental elements stipulated by the provisional constitution: 1, constitutional review and implementation; 2, completion of the federal system; 3, democratization. The government is also committed to a peaceful transition of political power in 2016. Mr. President, 3 years later, we are turning this vision into reality. The process of reviewing and revising the Constitution has started during the past 3 years. We have supported the formation of 3 interim regional administrations according to our Constitution. The formation of the last interim regional administration for the Hiran and Middle Shabelle regions is proceeding soon. This is the last block completing the federalization map of Somalia. Mr. President, I'm happy to inform the August Council that the resource sharing among the regions and the central government has been signed. The agreement has been reached and signed. As far as democratization is concerned, in 19th October 2015, early this week, the process to accomplish the third strand of statehood began. That is the National Consultation Forum, which is indeed to facilitate the process of building a state which must be citizen-led. It cannot be exclusive in origin, implementation, or outcome. It must be accessible, representative, and inclusive. The voice of the people who may have struggled to be heard in the past must be strengthened, and it is being strengthened. The National Consultation Forum is also intended to facilitate the interest of all the people of Somalia to a common destination, enhancing legitimacy through peaceful, democratic means. With respect to the security sector, Mr. President, we would like to draw your attention that on 9 September 2015, the Somali President, His Excellency Hassan Sheikh Mohamed Mahamud, announced sweeping security sector reforms, committing the government to building a more integrated and accountable security sector. We are currently in the process of carrying out a comprehensive review of the security sector in order to address structural imbalance and efficiencies. This pending review would include a national threat assessment in order to rationalize and streamline the roles, missions, and resource allocations across the Security Council. The Somali government is committed to undertaking a comprehensive biometric registration process and a security sector financial governance review with support of our international partners in order to establish a foundation on which to build a transparent and sustainable security sector. Moreover, the Somali government has significant gains in liberating nearly 80% of Somalia from Al-Shabaab, and more recently beginning to process the process of national troop integration. Mr. President, Somalia also made significant improvements in the past year in complying with the weapons and ammunition management notifications, reporting and control requirements. By way of an example, just in the past 6 months, the Somali government had made over 4,500 weapons, established a weapon and ammunition technical working group, and also agreed upon this term of reference for the joint verification team. Furthermore, officials of the Somali government held consultative meetings to initiate the design of a roadmap to develop a comprehensive national framework governing all full life cycle of weapons and ammunition. This clearly demonstrates, Mr. President, the significant improvements made by the Somali government in complying with the arms notification requirements. The Somali government has also been receptive to the United Nations Security Council's resolutions and welcomes the report of the Somalia-Eritrea Monitoring Group. The government of Somalia recognizes that it needs to work with the monitoring group, and we reiterate that we do not necessarily agree with all of the findings of the monitoring group. However, we will work with the monitoring group, and during the next mandate, we seek to strengthen this relationship further. Once again, we will be pleased to welcome the monitoring group in Mogadishu again on a more frequent basis. Mr. President, finally, I wish to highlight and underline my government's appreciation and thanks for the support given by the international partners and international community. With particular appreciation, Mr. President, and thanks to the African Union and the AMISOM troop contributing countries. Thank you, Mr. President.
Agradezco su intervención y a continuación.
Thank you very much for your statement, and I now give the floor to the Ambassador of Eritrea.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would like to thank you and the members of the UN Security Council for giving my delegation the opportunity to participate in an agenda item that directly affects my country. I wish to extend my sincere thanks to the chairman of the committee and those representatives from different countries who, in defending the principles of impartiality, objectivity, and procedures of the UN Security Council, have played a constructive role so that the draft resolution could reflect the reality in Eritrea, the Horn of Africa, and the Red Sea region. Mr. President, the two justifications for the imposition of the unjust sanction against Eritrea were crystal clear. They were Eritrea's alleged support to Al-Shabaab in Somalia and the Djibouti-Eritrean disputes, in the context of their implication to regional and international peace and security, period. Nothing less, nothing more. Mr. President, the Somalia-Eritrea Monitoring Group has concluded that, I quote, it has found no evidence of Eritrea's support to Al-Shabaab in Somalia. With regards to the disputes between Eritrea and Djibouti, the presidents of the two countries have entrusted the state of Qatar to mediate their disputes. Therefore, since the two justifications for the imposition of the unjust sanction against Eritrea are non-existent, the correct, logical, and legal action should have been for the UN Security Council to immediately and unconditionally lift the unjust sanction against Eritrea and terminate the mandate of the Somalia-Eritrea Monitoring Group concerning the part of Eritrea. Any other pretext is unacceptable. It is a political agenda. Unfortunately, because of the misguided geopolitical agenda of the United States administration in the Horn of Africa and the Red Sea region, the UN Security Council has sadly decided to maintain the unjust sanction against the people and government of Eritrea for another year. Sanction, as you all know, affects the poor, especially the most vulnerable, women and children. Again, also, the sanction restricts Eritrea's capacity and capability to defend Eritrea's security and sovereignty, and as well as also to effectively contribute to the UN Security Council resolution, which says we all have to fight against global terrorism and extremism. Concerning this United Nations Security Council decision, which is adopted, that defies logic and legality, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Eritrea has put out a statement which, for the record, I will share it with the Council. UN Security Council, and I quote, press release from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, UN Security Council action that undermines its own legal authority is the title. In a resolution adopted today, the UN Security Council has sadly decided to maintain yet for another year the unwarranted sanctions that were originally imposed against Eritrea on Christmas Eve of December 2009 and its follow-up resolution that was adopted in December 2011. At the time, Eritrea was falsely accused of dispatching 2,000 troops to Somalia in support of Al-Shabaab. The pattern of unsubstantiated allegations was repeated in 2011 when Eritrea was wrongly also accused, just 1 month prior to the adoption of the Resolution 2023, of sending 3 plane loads of arms to Al-Shabaab through the airports of Baidoa. All these allegations were patently false, but trumped-up charges were vital for the architects of the sanctions resolution against Eritrea, who used their diplomatic clout to ram through the unjust measures against Eritrea in a largely planned Security Council. 6 years on, all Security Council members and the international community as a whole are fully aware of the false testimonies that were concocted against Eritrea to serve some political ends. Indeed, the UN report this year, as it was also the case last year, states categorically that the monitoring group has found no evidence of Eritrea's support to Al-Shabaab. Under normal circumstances, the UN Security Council should drop this case against Eritrea and rescind the sanction resolutions, which were unjust in the first place. But these are not normal times. And instead of redressing this injustice and making due reparations to Eritrea, the UN Security Council despite the reservations and objections of several of its members, had adopted to dwell, has opted to dwell on its misguided course under the heavy-handed prodding of the U.S. administration and its usual allies. As it happens, the UN Security Council is invoking non-existent facts and potential threats to regional peace and security in its dogged desire to harass and punish Eritrea. There is one unfathomable fact that the UN Security Council cannot gloss over as it unfairly victimizes Eritrea. Ethiopia continues to occupy sovereign Eritrean territories, including the town of Badme, in the flagrant violation of the Charter of the United Nations. Ethiopia's act also violates the Algiers Agreement, guaranteed by the UN Security Council, and the final and binding arbitration decision. This must surely be an affront to the UN Security Council, in as much as it wishes to hide and avoid it. The UN Security Council is mandated by Articles 39 and 41 of the UN Charter to take appropriate measures against Ethiopia. But the UN Security Council cannot contemplate this action as Ethiopia enjoys the full protection and tutelage of the United States administration. But in submitting to U.S. political wishes and preference, the UN Security Council is compromising and undermining its own legal mandate and authority. Eritrea and the region will suffer consequently of unwarranted UN action, sanction in the short term. But in the long term, the real casualty is international law, as well as the coercion of the UN Security Council's legal authority in the maintenance of international regional peace and security. I thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Le agradezco mucho su intervención.
Thank you for your statement. The session of the meeting is adjourned.